Henry Mancini, please. Sunday night, and that means from high above beautiful Lake Osceola in downtown Jefferson Valley, New York, the John Mack Radio Show is on the air. Good evening, this is John McMullen, John Mack to some. Welcome to the 253rd episode of weekly John Mack Radio Show. The recordings for the previous 252 shows may be found at www.johnmack13.com under the Radio Show tab. And John Mack is J-O-H-N-M-A-C, so that's www.johnmack13.com. In addition to previous radio shows, you'll also find links to my online daily newsletter at my web home. The newsletter is a curation of 10 news articles from around the country and the world. Try it and subscribe. Only one email per day, and it's free. So once again, that's www.johnmack13.com. Writers in the Hudson Valley should be aware that on Thursday, November 8th, is the weekly meeting of the Mayapak Writers Group, now in its 21st year, at 6:30 p.m. at the Mayapak Library on Route 6 in Mahopac, New York, which is the correct pronunciation. More than 100 books have been published by writers from this group. People wishing more information may contact me at johnmack13@gmail.com. I hope you'll join us next week at the same time for an interview with novelist and blogger Teresa Denaro, than every week at this time. Now to this week's show, as mentioned, the 252nd in the series. My guest is poet, editor, artist, and photographer, Alexis Brown Francia, a poetry editor of Culture Weekly. While I have been the Facebook friend of Alexis for a number of years, and she has actually rejected some of my poetry, this is the first time that we have spoken, and I'm very interested in following her career through ups and downs with some real tragedies and real successes. The listeners wishing to join Alexis and me on the air may do so by calling 646-716-9756. That's 646-716-9756. I generally hold caller participation until the end of my conversation with my guest. But let's get started. Welcome to the show, Alexis.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
Well, would you start us off with the poem?
I will. I debated what to start with, and I think I'm going to start with a poem from my third collection, Enter Here. And it's "Tonight I Will Dream of Angelica, My First Ex-Girlfriend, Who Taught Me the Rules of the Road. Angelica comes on to me like a man, all slim hip swagger, relentless, dangling that red 57 T-bird at me like dessert. "Let me take you for a ride, chica," she says after acting class. I figure, what's the harm? But Ms. Angel Food gets out of hand. I don't count on her heart-shaped ass or those brown nipples crammed in my mouth. I don't count on the dial-o-matic four-way power leather seats, the telescoping steering wheel, or the frantic pleasure of her face between my thighs. I admit, I've always been driven to sin, but Angelica's far from blameless. She rides me hard, week after week, double clutches me into ecstasy, hip bone against hip bone, the dulcet, lingering groan of our gears grinding. When I confess the affair to my boyfriend, he jacks himself off in the galley kitchen, comes all over his unattainable fantasies. He says he doesn't consider sex between women to be cheating and begs me to set up a threesome. I tell him the T-Bird's a two-seater and watch his face fall. I could end it, but why? All I say is I want her for myself. All I can say is I'm a die-hard romantic. Anyone I do for love.
Wow.
That's it.
Heavy. Well, I like it. Bridge, grew up, then go to early school.
I grew up in L.A. I'm L.A. native. I grew up in Topanga Canyon, Calabasas area, went to Cal High School and graduated with a degree in theater from UC Santa Barbara, local girl.
Do you remember what your early aspirations were?
I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be an actor. My degree is in acting, theater. For a while, when I was about 12, I think I wanted to be a lawyer, but I didn't want to be one for very long. I always wanted to be an artist.
Were you an early reader, as many writers are?
My mom says I started reading at 2. There was always a lot of art, literature, a lot of books around, and nothing was off limits. My parents had a bookcase that went very high, and the deal was if I could reach it, I could read it. So I got a ladder, and I was reading The Carpetbaggers at 12, you know, a lot of Bukowski as a girl. You know, I just could read whatever I wanted. There were no rules.
How about during your high school and your college years? Did you write for a school paper or for a literary journal?
You know, I wrote for the arts magazine in high school, but mostly I was in acting in those days. I was in the Thespian Society and acted in a lot of plays. I sang. I had probably 12 years of voice lessons. I thought for a while maybe I'd become a singer, just something in the arts.
You said in your note to me that after college you went traveling for a while. Where did you go and what brought you there?
After I graduated from college and my sister had graduated from college, we decided to do our own version of a European tour and flew into Paris, and we hooked up with friends, family friends, and they got us a Volkswagen van that we outfitted as a, you know, like a sort of a trailer. And we traveled for 2 years all over Europe. We spent time in Turkey. We spent time in Greece. We were in the former Yugoslavia. I got a job, just a serendipitous kind of job, writing for a camping and caravanning newspaper out of High Wycombe, which is outside of London. And I would write a column and take photographs and get it to them through American Express, and they would send me money, and it's supported with parental help our travels for almost 2 years.
And then they came back to the United States. Now, I know, and this is jumping both at the beginning and a little ahead, you were married to what you called a disastrous marriage, were able to turn it into your most recent book. How difficult was it to turn to that time of many years ago?
That's an interesting question, John. Primarily a confessional poet, and I really mine my own past for my material. And I had been writing about this really disastrous first marriage for many years. But in those writings, I was always kind of a victim. You know, it was my husband and my best friend and their traitorous affair. But as I've grown older and hopefully wiser, I started looking at it as three equally guilty participants in a ménage à trois. And when I started to own my own, become responsible for my own shit in this relationship, and it blossomed and it opened up a whole new way of looking at it. In Junkie Wife, the book we're talking about, on the first page it says, "No names were changed because no one was innocent." And that was how I looked at the book, and then it came together very, very quickly over the course of less than a year.
How about jumping in with another poem if we want?
I'll read one from Junkie Wife, which I have here, and I do that. This one is called Quiet Candy. After you kicked me out and moved Vicky in, I spilled my guts to the Armenian drug dealer at the Glendale Galleria. He told me he'd fix my Porsche, pay off my credit cards, keep me in cashmere and coke if I'd let him. He dressed me in silk that grazed my ass, said he liked the whiteness of my thighs, said if I were his, he'd keep me out of the sun. There I was, strung out on dope, all lanky, white-skinned need. The Armenian drug dealer bought me 4-inch Louboutins and a leash, bought me a Stetson to shave my face. I let him move me into his condo in Glendale. The Armenian drug dealer liked to drive the freeways, had business in San Diego and Oceanside and San Juan Capistrano, liked the top down on the Beamer, liked the way my hair whipped in the wind. He liked fucking me in his 3-car garage pinned against the hood. He could do it for hours when I'd let him. The Armenian drug dealer liked Candy on his arm, quiet Candy who was loud in the bedroom. He liked my ass raised on a pillow, legs spread like a gullwing Mercedes. I let him do anything he wanted. He wanted me to tell him about you. I told the Armenian drug dealer how you wrapped Vicky in my mother's embroidered shawl, how you gave her my grandmother's amethyst ring, how you used a rifle to make your point, how you could only come if you tied me up, how you papered our bedroom with lies. The Armenian drug dealer wanted to storm your house, wanted to tie you up with the same ropes you used on me, wanted to rip my mother's shawl from Vicky's shoulders, wanted to take the rifle out of your hands, wanted to bring back my grandmother's amethyst ring. So I let him.
Wow. Heavy ending. Wow.
Yeah.
In addition to your poetry, you're an award-winning photographer. Did you begin that when young?
When I was 10, my dad and mom and my sister, we all went on vacation to San Francisco, and my dad bought me a little throwaway kind of camera, you know, with 10 rolls of film. And when we got back, he had them developed, and he looked at them. And my dad went out and bought me a Nikon camera and said, "You have talent. Here you go." And it was a Nikon camera with a 135 portrait lens and a 55 just straight across lens. And
I still have that camera and still use it. And I've been taking pictures ever since. Excuse me.
Okay, now back to chronology. So what happened after your marriage ended?
Which one?
The first one
first
that we were
marriage,
on.
My first marriage was, let's see, we got married in December. We separated in November, and I was divorced the following September. The second marriage, which I'm writing a book about right now, was equally disastrous. I was married to a black drug dealer out of South Central, and the book is called Gidget Goes to the Ghetto, and it'll be finished one of these days, but he and I had a really disastrous relationship, and he was not only a drug dealer, but bisexual, and eventually died of AIDS. It was, you know, we were friends that became lovers that became parents. And if that hadn't happened, we probably wouldn't have stayed together. But he was my son's father. So once you have a kid with somebody, you're kind of stuck with them, you know, even if you're not living with them. So that was bad marriage number two.
You've been published in many journals and magazines, over 200 of them, over 40 anthologies. You didn't begin publishing books until 2014. What took you so long?
I had never been published at all or written anything or submitted anything for publication until the middle of 2012. So all of that has happened since the end of 2012 when I was first published. I started late, so I had to work. My first book was published 2014, second book 2015, third book 2017, fourth book 2018. And I have two books coming out next year, so busy.
How about one more poem, and then we'll start getting into the books.
I'm going to read you one I really love. This one was chosen by Edward Hirsch for the Best American Poetry 2016. It's in my book, Enter Here. And the title is, When I Turned 14, My Mother's Sister Took Me to Lunch and Said, Soon You'll Have Breasts. They'll mushroom on your smooth chest like landmines. A boy will show up, a schoolmate, or the gardener's son. Polecat around you, all brown-eyed persistence. You'll be everything your parents hate. A smart aleck, a dropout, a street racer on the midnight prowl. Even your best friend will call him a loser. But this boy will steal your reason, have you writing his name inside a scarlet heart, entwined with misplaced passion and a bungled first kiss. He'll bivouac beneath your window, sweet-talk you until you sneak out into his waiting cations. Go ahead, tempt him with your newfound glamour. Tumble into the back seat of his Ford at the top of Mulholland, flushed with stardust, his mouth in a death clamp on your nipple, his worshipful fingers setting sacraments on your clit. Soon he will deceive you with your younger sister, the girl who once loved you most in the world.
Another great quick ending. The title of your first book is, as all your titles, an eye grabber, How I Lost My Virginity to Michael Cohen and Other Hearts Stab Poems. Where did that come from?
Well, gosh. It just sort of evolved. It was a while ago. And I think the first poem in the book is How I Lost My Virginity to Michael Cohen. And it's a numbered poem that just takes the reader through the loss of my virginity. And it just seemed like such an outrageous title. the original cover had a photo of me at 17, laying on a bed, sort of naked from the waist up, and my hands were covering my breasts, and it was very erotic. And my publisher didn't think that Amazon would carry the book, et cetera, et cetera. So we sort of, you know, backed down and had the one of me staring in a mirror. But I think that's kind of how the title evolved. Especially now,
is
there other Michael
a unified theme to the book? Is it all erotica, or is it your coming of age, or what is the, is there a unifying theme at all?
I think it's a, you know, the first book, How I Lost My Virginity to Michael Cohen, is very erotic. It's all about sex and desire and about owning your feelings, owning that you are a sexual being. You know, my books are very much of a piece in that they're about power. I write in sexual terms, but I'm writing about power. You know, who has it, how to get it, how to keep it, how to wield it. You know, that's what I'm interested in. I just most often write about it in sexual terms.
The next year, 2015, you published what must have been a heartbreaking task, the State of Grace, the Joshua Elegies. Tell us whatever you're comfortable about that experience.
My only child, my beloved son, Joshua Dorian Roan, died of a very rare and always fatal cancer called an epithelioid sarcoma. He was 23 when it struck and 26 when he died. And I started writing probably 6 months after he died in 2007. I just started writing, and eventually I was asked by a publisher if I'd be interested in putting them in a book. And I was, and we did. So that came out in 2015, State of Grace, the Joshua Elegies.
In 2016, right after the Trump election, the New York Times published a poem of yours. Tell us about the poem.
The poem is I Prefer Pussy, a little city kitty ditty that I wrote. I've been sent a request to write for an anthology, and the request was, could you write about the vagina, and could you write about it using one of these terms? And there were probably 30 or 40, you know, names for vagina, and they were all on this sheet. And I said, okay, you know, I'll try it. And I used two, and I used three, and I used seven, and I used, you know, I just kept writing. And I never write rhyming poetry, but in this case, I wrote rhyming poetry, and I sent it to the New York Times, and they published it. It was just one of those things. Did you want me to read this one?
That would be nice. Of course, that tied directly into the Trump pussy comment, so there was obviously some political stuff there also. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. This is also from Enter Here. I prefer pussy, a little kitty. Oops, try it again. I prefer pussy, a little city kitty bitty. I prefer pussy as in cat, as in willow, as in chases a rat, as in raised on a pillow. I prefer pussy as in riot, as in foots, as in pussycat doll, as in puss in boots. I prefer pussy as a twat, it is not, nor is it a beaver, a clam, or a cleaver. I prefer pussy to nookie or gash, it isn't a box or a cave or a slash. I prefer pussy to snapper or snatch, far better than taco or slit or man catch. I prefer pussy, though rosebud's not bad, and muffin sounds homey, and cooch makes me glad. I prefer pussy, as in whip, as in flower, as into it you slip, as in I have the power.
As I had the power. That's a great ending.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really a fun, you know, I never write rhyming poetry, but this one just sort of fell into my lap.
In 2017, you're back with another book, Enter Here. Please tell us about that book.
Enter Here is the follow-up erotic book to How I Lost My Virginity to Michael Cohen, and contains a lot of the sister poems, the poems that I've written about my sister, like when I turned 14, and a number of others. It also contains a number of just really unabashedly erotic work, a lot of lesbian poems. I came out as a bisexual at 17, and often write about women as well as men. I'm an equal opportunity lover. So it's just kind of a continuation and probably a more mature work than virginity.
You've already gotten into this. You mentioned in your note to me that it's very sexy, a love letter to Los Angeles. You said elsewhere that you are a compulsive writer of erotica. Can you flush that out just a little more?
Can I flush it out? Sure. How I'm wired, you know. I've always been sensual. I've always loved sex. And that's kind of how I see the world. As I said, I see it in sexual terms. I like the politics of sex, and I like to write about power and couch it in sexual terms. It just seems to work best for me.
Is it just the quality of the writing and the imagery that differentiates erotica from softcore porn, do you think?
I think it's that, and I think it's intent. When I first started sending out my work to quote-unquote high-end literary magazines, I would get the strangest acceptances. They would say, you know, I don't like erotica, but I love your work. Or I don't usually like sex about, you know, work about sex, but I love your work and I understand your work. And people often send me porn. I'm like, why? Don't you read my work? I don't think it's pornographic. I think I'm blanking. I don't know. Does that answer it?
I think so, yeah. You're the one that defines to what it is, sure. Before returning to your own work, please tell us about Cultural Weekly.
I lucked into the best gig I've ever had at the end of 2012, and I became poetry editor of Cultural Weekly. And it's just a weekly culture and arts magazine, politics, dance, film, you name it, with a number of contributors from all over the country, all over the world, although we are here in Los Angeles. Our founder and publisher is a brilliant, brilliant man named Adam Leipzig, and he runs it, and he's just given me free rein to choose who I want, focus on the poets I want, and introduce our over 17,000 weekly readers to really fine poetry that they may not have seen before.
In addition to the use of photography in your own books, you're in the process of producing the photography work. Please tell us about that.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand that. I'm in the process
of producing the photography work in addition to your poetry works.
Oh, you mean the work I do as a photographer?
Yes.
Yes, I do two basic kinds of work with photography. I'm either in the street, shooting street photography, and that mostly with my iPhone, kind of undercover, shooting from the hip,
or I'm in a studio with a very expensive Nikon with an 85-millimeter portrait lens where I control the light, I control everything. Very different than the haphazard sort of luck you need to shoot on the street. But I'm equally enamored of them both.
Now, don't you plan to produce a book, all of your pictures of poets in the LA area?
I have been encouraged to do so. I have photographed over 150 poets, LA and SoCal poets, a number of whom you can see on my website. It's a lot of time, effort, and money, none of which I really, I don't know. If someone were to say to me, hey, I've got $5,000, let's make a book, I would do it. But I put a lot more effort into my writing than I do my photography, whether that's right or wrong. Photography's for fun, writing's for serious. Why, do you know someone who wants to donate to the cause?
I don't know. I just thought it was very interesting that you are doing this work with poets. Do you want to delve any deeper into your most recent book? We already talked about a little, Drunky Wife. Why did you just do it now rather than then?
Well, it goes back to my perspective and to where I am in my life, where I could look back on it and not be a victim. Until then, every time I wrote it, I ended up, you know, being a victim, and it was, and they were the villains. And I kept looking at it, and one day I thought, nope, everybody's guilty. Everybody was responsible. Let's write from that perspective rather than victimhood. And it was very liberating, and I don't think I was ready to write that way until a couple of years ago when I started writing Junkie Wife. You know,
have you gotten any pushback in any of your books that you've dealt with real people? Have you gotten any pushback from the real people?
Well, one cousin thought I was writing about someone who had the same name and got very upset that I would defame his mother, but I wasn't. That's been about it. You know, the lovely thing is with my family, they are either very, very supportive, like my sister, who I have her permission to write about everything that's ever happened between she and I, and we're very close, including some really terrible things that are happening right now with one of her children who has, unfortunately, a terrible problem with substance abuse. And my sister says, write about it. Maybe we can help someone. Maybe we can share. Maybe someone will learn something. So, and the rest of my family, I don't think they read my work. Maybe a couple of my cousins, but my brother, never. So they don't know. I could write anything. They'd never know.
That's funny. As I mentioned earlier, yeah, it is. As I mentioned earlier, you've published in literary journals throughout the country and the world, in addition to your four books. You've also appeared in Best American Poetry of 2016. As we have discussed so far, your poetry has a wide range: erotica, personal tragedy, horror, and there's one nuance. If you had to say any more to provide the focus for the audience on your writing, what would it be, if you could narrow it at all?
And narrow down my focus?
In other words, if someone say, what do you write about? Now, we've already talked about erotica, personal tragedy, horror, there's one you honest. If you had to put it all in a paragraph, how would you present your writing?
Wow. That's a question. I would say I write my truth. I write from my own perspective. I
I care that the writing is good. I care that it's the best writing that I can do. I truly want to communicate. I want the best thing for me, John, is when people come up to me after a reading, and I read a lot. I'm an actor. I'm you know, a ham. I like to get up there and read my own stuff. People come up to me and they say, wow, I had my own cousin Lisa, or when I was 14, this happened to me, or, oh, wow, I wish that, you know, and they share their own private stories and confessions, and people write to me and send me, men write to me and send me beautiful erotic poems, not because they love me, but because they're afraid to send them to their wives. They don't know what they would think. They're embarrassed. But I give them permission. And for me, I want my writing to give you permission to be as sexy as you want, to write about your dead child or your lover or your life and have no boundaries and not be judged. I think that's what I'd like to come, you know, I'd like to say about my own work.
We haven't talked about any political writing. Have you gotten into writing about the present political scene or the political scene in California or anything?
I do some ecological writing. I have a few poems that are going to be coming out about Trump. I have a rather fantastical Me Too poem called Old School that was recently published in Diode about what it was like in the last century to be sexually harassed and have to live through it without a Me Too movement. So that kind of political, yeah.
There was an interesting thing you mentioned, the Me Too movement. I was at a reading a week of Friday night at the Hudson Valley Writers Center, which is a terrific place. And after the featured writer, then I read some of my poetry. Then two women who are always there, one woman in her probably in her 60s, and her daughter, who's a fairly recent widow in her 40s, got up, and the mother got up first, and apparently the whole Kavanaugh hearings had gotten the daughter extremely upset. And she told her mother after 20 years for the first time that she had been raped. And her mother listened and told her, and then her mother said, I was too. And they both, and neither of them knew about this in the other one's life. And then they talked about that in their own writings. Then there was the fellow that came with them, and I have no idea if he was a member of the family or not. He was a little fellow, and he got up, and he had the speaker, and he had a recorder or a cell phone, and he put a hat on, he turned the recorder on, and he lip-synced Leonard Cohen's Everyone Knows. He was terrific. He was moving all over the place, and his hands are moving, and the expressions, and when he finished, the MC says, whoever the fellow's name was, the fellow happened to sit down next to me, the MC said, do you mind if I tell the people how old you are? And the fellow said, no. And he said, he's 99. And the fellow says, soon to be 100. It was just an amazing three things. Oh, God almighty. How about another poem?
I could read the political old school one if you like.
Okay, sure.
This came about, I was sitting with one of my very best friends for over 30 years, and we were talking recently in the last few months about all the times that we were sexually harassed and the horrible things that happened to us. And I said, why don't you write them down? And I'll write a poem for you. And this is called Old School. And it's as told to the poet by S.M.G.
It's 1984. A board member at the LA Library Association pushes me against the Xerox machine, forces his tongue down my throat. It's 1977 when I watch the musical director at Lincoln Center jack off under his desk. Over dirty martinis, his assistant confides it's her job to wipe up the semen splatter each night before she goes home. It's 1985. I'm raising money for medical research when Dr. Abdul R.H. greets me at the Saudi embassy. When my shoe catches the hem of my dress, exposing my breasts, he claps. It's 1978. The Brooklyn Academy of Music. Six of us girls lunch at my boss's flat in the village. Before dessert, he leans his fly. It's 1988. My boss, notorious ladies' man Jimmy James R., president of Cal State LA, propositions me, my sister, and every woman under the age of 30. Afraid of retribution? No one reports him. It's 1971. Six of us cheerleaders at Blair High watch a man in the stands masturbate to our practice routines. I've never seen a penis up close, erect. What you looking at? He smirks. It's 1985. Board member David M. asks me out in front of the entire board. His masculinity's at stake. It's 1986. Dr. Abdul R.H. invites me to discuss the research budget at his L.A. hotel. His suite is filled with roses. He's naked under the robe. It's 1972. Dr. Lusk, university physician, palpates my breast as part of a sore throat exam. You have nice German breasts, he exclaims. He prescribes a spanking, lozenges. It's 1973. Danny hits me in the face for calling him a male chauvinist pig. Later, he holds me outside of a moving car until I agree to fuck him. It's 1978. I tell the president of the Brooklyn Academy of Music we are all resigning as a group. Who is we? He asks. I realize I'm on my own.
Wow. I'm on my own. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's next for you?
I have two books coming out in 2019. One of them is called The Dead Kid Poems. It's the follow-up to the Book of Elegies, State of Grace, the Joshua Elegies. It's going to have follow-up poems about my son, poems about dead children and the politics of the NRA. That one comes out, published by Kaiso Flash, in March. And I'm doing a book with New York Quarterly, your part of the world. They asked me if I'd be interested in doing a new and selected, which will be all erotic, some of my new work and work from Enter Here and How I Lost My Virginity. And that'll come out probably more towards summer. So,
okay.
Oh, and I'm writing a novel, sort of a graphic novel called My Criminal Boyfriend. And I'm hoping to finish that by the end of the year.
Have you ever done a graphic novel before?
It's not going to be a graphic novel in the sense that it'll be cartoons or drawings. It's going to be photographs. And the novel will be punctuated by the photographs. So, no, but I've done graphic stories and graphic poems. So I think I know what I'm doing.
That sounds both interesting and difficult to do. But,
I know.
But you know better than I do.
I like a challenge. I've been doing essays and, you know, getting work out in different genres.
Is this your first attempt at a novel?
No, I wrote a novel in 2010, finished it in 2010. It's called Annie's Sinful Nature. And as a close friend and mentor said to me, well, you learned how to write in that book. So to your question, will it ever see the light of day? If you were to ask that, probably not, but it taught me a great deal. I hope I do better on this one.
Yeah, I find, what I have found is that the hardest thing to write, I don't know if you've done any of this, is short story writing, because it's not just pouring out the way the poem is, and you don't have the space to develop the characters, the plot, the place, everything. I really admire people who can do short stories well. Have you done any short stories at all?
I have. I've done mostly flash fiction, you know, under 1,000 words. I had
right.
a short story that came out earlier this year. It came out in Ragazine, and then it came out in the Cafe Reader, which is a literary magazine in New Zealand, called His Full Attention, which was a short story about a woman who goes up to the top of a mountain with a man she barely knows. So I've written a few. I studied a long time with the remarkable teacher, mentor, poet Jack Grates here in L.A., and Jack said that the only difference between poetry and prose is the length of the lines. So that's kind of my philosophy as well. Writing's writing.
Don't you also do some work with your husband? Did you mention that? You know, to me.
I do. He works with me on all of the photography. My husband's retired. He was chief technology officer of Technicolor when he did work. And mostly now he supports me in whatever I want to do. He'll be working with me on this novel as we get to the point where we want to take the photos. He'll be in charge of all of that, resetting it all up.
We've covered a lot the basis tonight. What else you'd like the audience to know about Alexis Rhone Fancher?
Well, I'm a big fan of my being in the poetry community, especially the community here in LA, but also the international poetry community. I really want to bring as many people with me on my journey as possible, poets, writers, readers. I don't know. I guess if you had to ask me what my religion is, I would give you the same answer as the Dalai Lama. I believe my religion is kindness. It's inclusiveness. I think there's room for everyone. And it's only crowded at the bottom. How's that?
I get it. Would you take us off with another poem?
I will. Let's see. This will be in the new book, The Dead Kid Poems. It's called Cruel Choices. When my husband's two grown daughters are in town, the three of them go to the movies or play pool, share dinner every night, stay out late. I haven't seen my stepdaughters since my son's funeral in 2007. When people ask, I say nice things about the girls as if we had a relationship. When people ask if I have children, I change the subject or I lie and say no, or sometimes I put them on the spot and tell them yes, but he died. They look aghast and want to know what happened. Then I have to tell them about the cancer. Sometimes when the older daughter, his favorite, is in town and she and my husband are out together night to night, I wonder what it would be like if that was me and my boy. If life was fair, and rather than my husband having two children and I none, we each had one living child, his choice which one to keep. Lately, when people ask, I want to lie and say, yes, my son is a basketball coach. He married a beautiful Iranian model
with kind eyes, and they live in London with their twin girls who visit every summer. The same twins his girlfriend aborted with my blessing when my son was 18, deemed too young for fatherhood, and everyone said there would be all the time in the world.
Wow. You're very brave, Alexis.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Alexis, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
A real pleasure talking with you, John. Thank you for having me.
Send any comments or questions to me about the show to johnmack13@gmail.com, and be sure to join us next week for my interview with novelist and blogger Teresa DeNaro at the same time. Go to my website, www.johnmack13.com, for the URLs of previous shows and the schedule of upcoming ones. And in the words of Mets radio announcer Howie Rose, if the Mets win, put it in a book. And until next time, as he used to say in the old neighborhood, see ya. Let's go off with the Eagles. Amazon, play Peaceful Easy Feeling.
Playing Peaceful Easy Feeling from your library on Amazon Music.
The way you walk past me is the way.
Against your skin is so brown. And I want to sleep with you in the desert sun. With a million stars up above. Cause I got
a peaceful, easy feeling. Thanks again, Alexis, and good night, everybody.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, John. It's been a real pleasure.